The trade deadline is over. We had some moves, nothing incredibly major, and a lot of guys who actually we thought might get traded, maybe should have been traded, and were not. Joining me to break it all down, Dane LaRue. What's up?
Excited to have a conversation about pick protection.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what everyone would just love for us to discuss, although there are definitely some pick protection implications here. The biggest thing for me, though, I thought kind of the stars of this deadline, if you will, and you can debate kind of how they did ultimately, are the Detroit Pistons.
Yeah, I think they have to be, because they were a part of two of the more impactful moves of the last couple of days. Of course, one of them occurred before today.
Yeah, let's start with the Tobias Harris trade. We talked about it a little bit on that 15 and 60 because it broke while we were going through it. Now, in concert with these other moves, we kind of see what the plan is in Detroit. So let's start with that Harris trade, and at least from the Pistons' perspective, they got Tobias Harris, gave up Brandon Jennings and Ersan Ilyasova, both expiring contracts this year. Harris is under contract for basically about 16 per the next 3 years after this one. And I think we both thought that this was a pretty good win for Detroit.
It is. And the way that I think we both would think about this trade is that they used their cap space early. And they weren't going to get somebody in all likelihood better than Tobias Harris for about $16 million a year, especially considering his age and his potential. I mean, most guys who really move in free agency are more towards their late 20s. And so Tobias Harris, while a nebulous player, while not a perfect player, fits in a little bit better with their desired age range and also is at a reasonable number.
Yeah, he's someone who can really help with their lack of scoring on the second unit. I mean, I think they are going to take a little bit of a step back now, going back to Steve Blake at backup point guard, who's been awful. So they are, it wouldn't shock me, despite the overall talent upgrade, if they aren't quite as good as they would have been when healthy, although Harris definitely helps having another option on the wing with KCP out with this groin injury, as they've struggled in his absence for the last couple of weeks. But I think overall, just that's the point, is spending the cap space early. Would you rather have Harris 3 more years at $16 million, he's age 23, or Ryan Anderson making up to $20 million, and, you know, with his injury history? And I think that Harris, you can argue, is the superior player now, and certainly over the next 3 years and at the salary that he's going to get with that cost certainty, is superior to him or really any other free agent you could look at that they could realistically get on the market.
And while I'm not sure that was the theory of that trade, it also applied to the Marcus Morris deal earlier. You know, Marcus Morris was on a really nice contract for what they expected the production, and they, in a way, they used a small amount of salary cap space early then too, and it worked out very well for them.
Yeah, so we'll stick with Detroit here. I mean, Detroit, before they traded away Ilyasova and Jennings, could have had, in the high 20 millions in cap space using Andre Drummond's small cap hold. Now, however, they also have traded for Donatas Badiounis and Marcus Thornton, and they sent out Joel Anthony, who then got moved by the Rockets to Philly in a dump, and then a top eight protected 2016 first rounder to the Rockets that almost certainly will go this season.
Yeah, there are enough bad teams in the league that even if things went really poorly for the Pistons the rest of the way, they should expect to stay good enough that the only way that pick would go is if they won the lottery. So you basically treat that as a traded part of this deal. And Demo is somebody that you and I have talked about before. We both really like his potential when he's healthy, but that when he's healthy is very hard to say.
Yeah, the Rockets, they were able to replenish the pick that they essentially gave up in the Ty Lawson trade. And if for some reason the Rockets don't make the playoffs, which actually wouldn't necessarily be the end of the world in a macro sense, but it might be just from an optics sense, then they would actually have two lottery picks, or if not two lottery picks, you know, maybe a low playoff pick, but certainly two picks in the teens probably, with which to kind of replenish the coffers. And they've done well with selections in that range. But this all comes back to really what you think of Badiounis. This is basically the exact same thing that Van Gundy did last year in trading for Reggie Jackson, a restricted free agent that his incumbent team did not want to pay. But last year, he basically didn't give up anything. He gave up, you know, Kyle Singler and DJ Augustin and a second or two. I don't remember exactly. This year, they gave up, you know, what's going to be a pretty darn decent pick, especially because, as you've noted, 2016 is probably going to be the last year under this rookie scale. These guys are going to be locked in at very cheap prices, considering those numbers don't go up as the cap goes up.
Exactly. And I kind of pimped that piece a little bit today, and what that was going for, and people said, oh, well, the class is worse, and by many accounts that is true, but the value you get is by having a guy who ideally eventually becomes a rotation player at this dirt cheap price, and the system around them is likely going to change in a couple ways. Just whatever CBA you've written about that very well before, and these guys are locked into a rookie scale, which is incredibly unfavorable to them. So even if the player isn't what everybody's hoping, the value is still there.
This did seem like a somewhat steep price to pay for me for Demo, but it's one of those things that could work out for sure. I think his fit there is great. He could be a stretch four. He's been improving in that area, but never been a great shooter, something that he's supposedly been working on more as he's been out with this back injury, which we'll get to. I really like that he could play either alongside Drummond or be a much better backup center than Aaron Baines, especially when they're scared from Hack a Drummond and don't have him in the game. Really, he and Harris together, when Reggie Jackson and Drummond aren't in, it gives you another place to go for offense. Demo, especially against second units, could be a very effective post scorer with his great touch with both hands, even though he doesn't necessarily get to the foul line that much. So I think he really can fit in well. His cap hold next year is only $5.7 million. But the two questions with uncertainty for him, number one, the back injury that has caused him to miss most of this year. And our friend of the program, Jeff Stotts, noted that of players who have back disc surgery the way that Muddy Unis had, 75% of them have recurring issues. And then the other uncertainty is how much he's likely to get paid this offseason. What are your thoughts on that latter point?
So my operating theory of this summer has been that basically that guys are going to get overpaid because there's going to be so much money out there that teams will have money at the end of the moratorium. So that sticking point that has been around, you know, we talked about how shocking it was that Enes Kanter got the money he got. That sticking point isn't really going to be there anymore, in my opinion. It's, of course, not for sure, but that's my instinct. However, Monty Unis is a little bit different because his injury concerns might scare some teams off. And so if I were to pick a restricted free agent that might face a more tepid market than you'd expect, Demo would probably be that guy, depending on how the season works out. So in a way, you're betting, you could bet on other teams being scared and getting a little bit of a discount, whereas nobody else is going to have a discount.
Yeah, and a lot of it depends on how he does now. He's going to have a chance to come in and get some playing time, although there are other options there now between Harris, Marcus Morris, Anthony Tolliver, who's been playing well there. It's not guaranteed that Demo, especially if he's coming off the back injury and has to kind of work back into shape, is going to be able to get a ton of minutes right away, that he's going to look great. You could see this, if it were another team, kind of degenerating into a qualifying offer type of standoff if he doesn't get the offer that he wants. But as you noted, there's so much money out there. And also, Van Gundy's precedence has been that when he likes guys, he will pay them. And, you know, he could have held out for maybe another couple million off of Reggie Jackson's price. But I would suspect that they will kind of reach an agreement on what that contract is going to be. And maybe even there have kind of been some small under the table discussions already on that point. My best guess is if Demo comes back and at least looks like he's semi-healthy, maybe doesn't play at the level that you would want, that maybe he ends up getting, you know, something like a $12 million a year deal, maybe only for 3 years instead of four, or maybe with, you know, a non-guaranteed year on the end, something like that. You know, so for $12 million a year, I think that's, you know, it's okay for him. The long-term implications, though, if he were to get that, and once they pay Drummond, is that they're just about out of cap flexibility now. Like they would have about $10 million in space with Demo's $5.7 million cap hold and then the small cap hold for Drummond. But you have to remember that if you use that $10 million and then you re-sign Drummond and Muddy Unis, now you're actually getting pretty close to the luxury tax already. Almost $110 million in salary is what their payroll would be next year. Maybe Tom Gores is willing to pay that, but it does seem like awfully steep for a team that essentially will have done nothing up until that point together.
They will have never made the playoffs as a group together. I'm sure they're hoping to this year. But yeah, that's a steep price to pay, and that's a story we're going to see with a couple other teams that, you know, want to be ambitious with their money, but they might be a little bit hesitant for that reason. But yeah, one of the takeaways for me with this with Detroit, especially when they have a good coach, is that other than point guard, which is a huge caveat, they have a lot of quality now. They have a lot of good players, and they added Marcus Thornton in that deal, who I think is, while Jody Meeks has been, you know, it's disappointing that he has been on the court this year, he can help them in that way. I don't think he's a long-term piece for them, but he can be a gap filler. And then they have this kind of morass at the big, at the front court positions, let's say, as the All-Star ballot now has it. So with the guys that you mentioned, and you can play them in a lot of different combinations, but you aren't going to have minutes from, let's say, non-NBA, like, just below replacement player guys. Those players are all talented, and Stanley Johnson, who we didn't really talk about, is another contributor who's young and who can grow into a larger role as well.
Yeah, and some of these guys would probably be movable in the future as well if they want to go that way, and they could, if they choose to, they can use that $10 million or so in space this summer to get another rotation piece. But if they do that, you're basically looking at being capped out through these next two summers. But I don't think that's the end of the world. As we talked about in the last podcast, these summers are going to be silly season. There are going to be some bad contracts handed out. And maybe in 2018-19, 2019-20, there will be a little bit of a retrenchment as the cap stops going up at a crazy rate, and you can kind of get back into the market then. I like what they did as far as, all right, we're fine staying out of these markets, other than the fact of Drummond, who's going to get a max anyway. He'll get, you know, $21.6 million is about what it should be now with that $92 million cap estimate that we have. And then Demo, you know, because of the fact that he's injured, they might be able to get a little bit of a discount on him. So I do like that they did that. I mean, just in isolation, though, what do you think of top eight protected first round pick for Demo? Is that a deal that you would have done?
No, it's too much to give up for him.
I think that you might be right about that, especially because these picks this year are going to be so valuable. I mean, maybe you could have lottery protected the pick and rolled it over again until next year. Maybe that would have been a little bit better. But now that it's essentially automatically going this way, I like the concept of, all right, this deal, if we make it, we're going to lottery protect it, because then we know that we're only giving up the pick if it actually works for us this year, you know, and then maybe next year you lottery protect it again. But, you know, and I'm not sure who else was going to be willing to give up this much for Demo. I think that the protection is the win. I think if it were lottery protected, I'd feel a lot better about it from Detroit's standpoint.
Yeah, and this is something we've talked about before, about the idea of having conditional picks. Like, that would have been a perfect way to remedy this, and lottery protection actually pretty much would have done that. And they could have, what I would have done in that case is give them lottery protection and then make it steeper the next year, you know, so make it top five, and you're not going to be that bad in 2016-2017. So you're making Houston feel better about, you know, that if things fall off, that you're going to get something decent for it, but you're actually you're mitigating some of your own downside risk. And so, yeah, they gave themselves a pick that's probably going to convey this year. And one of the storylines of this, and I'm sure we'll talk about this through line a couple of other points in this, is that Houston with Demo did a nice job of getting out of the kind of the risk that you face of having a guy potentially leave for nothing. In his case, while they have match rights, it could be just signing an offer sheet that's unreasonable for your team, which is what happened to a degree with Chandler Parsons, though that was in a different world. And they were one of the few teams that had an asset like that and said, hey, let's get something for it, and they got something great for it.
Yeah, I think that's right. And Detroit could definitely be pretty good. I mean, I don't think that this core now, I think this core, if it, you kind of take it to its logical conclusion and everyone improves the way that they could, this could maybe be like a 55-win type of team, you know, especially with their depth, probably a team that would be a little bit better in the regular season than in the playoffs. And considering how bad they've been, that's not too awful. And this is kind of moves that mirror in some ways what the Magic did when Stan was in Orlando, and that he defended on that very insightful podcast with Zach Lowe over the summer, where he said, hey, you overpaid Rashard Lewis. Well, hey, you know, we got Rashard Lewis and we ended up having some pretty good teams and getting to the finals, and we don't do that without him. Now, you can talk about nebulously about the opportunity cost, but Stan has the guys that he likes, and they have really made a lot of noise about how good their scouting efforts have been as far as pro personnel. They have guys watching every NBA game and cataloging it. And so I guess they feel like they are very confident in their scouting, and that's the direction they decide to go. So I think Houston, we don't have to spend as much time on, but I thought they did well here.
Absolutely. I mean, they got a nice asset for a guy who was concerning in a lot of ways, and that had his center versatility had kind of been replaced by Clint Capela doing well. And the power forward part of his game is nice, but it's not worth that. And they got something, and then they were able to give up just a second to get out of Joel Anthony's contract to go to the Sixers, which was a nice little piece of cap minutia for both teams.
Yeah, Houston was very close to the hard cap. Now they don't have that problem anymore. If they want to get in on some buyout guys, maybe they can a little bit. I think they still have some of their they have some of their regular MLE remaining if they want to do that now and to get in on some of these buyout guys. And they save some tax money, which is definitely helpful for a team that wasn't going to win it all this year by dumping Anthony for the price of a 2017 Denver second round pick. Before we move on to our next absolute blockbuster deal, let's talk about the way that you can go see all these new faces in new places. SeatGeek. SeatGeek is my go-to for NBA tickets or any other kind of tickets. Basically, anything that you're paying money to go see a performance or a sports event, SeatGeek is your jam. Did I just say jam? I guess I did. That's probably the first time I've ever used that. But anyway, that's how excited I am about SeatGeek. I'm using words that I never use. And the reason SeatGeek is so awesome is it aggregates all the ticket buying sites together. So you don't have to worry about, I didn't go to this site. Maybe I'm missing out on a good deal. Now it's all at your fingertips on the SeatGeek app. Couple of swipes and you are there. And you can also sell your tickets on SeatGeek as well. For the same reason, it's a great place to buy tickets. It's a great place to sell them because you're getting so many people getting your tickets in front of so many eyes that you can get a decent price for them. So SeatGeek knows the fair market value of every ticket. That's another advantage. Green is a pretty good deal. Red, maybe not so good. And SeatGeek can also help you price their tickets on their site so you can sell them quickly to another fan. It really just gives people so much more information. It's so much easier. You don't have to bother filling out all those squiggly lines or anything like that. For CAPTCHA, it's just a couple of swipes on your phone and you've got it. But make sure that those swipes include going into the settings tab, clicking add a promo code, and entering CAPSPACE. That's how they know that you came from us. CAPSPACE is all one word. And SeatGeek will send you $20 once you've made your first ticket purchase. So download that free SeatGeek app and enter promo code CAPSPACE today. Save yourself some money on tickets or make yourself some money selling them. Let's get to the Orlando side of this Harris deal now. You have been quite critical of it, shall we say.
So Orlando's kind of story of the last couple of years, and this isn't uniform. I had some people were getting mad at me about it, saying like, oh, look at this deal, look at that deal, is that more than any team I can think of, they've sold low on guys. And Tobias Harris isn't my favorite player by any stretch of the imagination, but he's a positive asset in my mind just because he has a lot of potential, his contract is reasonable, and they got out of him for things that will not be a part of the next really good Magic team. Brandon Jennings is a fine basketball player. He will be a useful piece for them, especially if CJ Watson's injury issues continue. Ersan Ilyasova is a nice player. We both liked the acquisition of him from Detroit earlier in the year, but you don't have any sort of beneficial situation with either one of them. I mean, you'll have their bird rights, but you're going to have a ton of cap space anyway. And you didn't get any sort of pick assets for them. So you basically just, you didn't necessarily salary dump him because you could get something from those guys, but functionally that's really what they did.
So let me play devil's advocate here to kind of see if I can encapsulate what Orlando was actually thinking. They now should have, if they decide not to keep Ilyasova, who is only $400,000 guaranteed, is making $8.4 million next year, if they decide to keep him, they could have $47 million in cap space. And they have that, and you also still have Aaron Gordon, Nikola Vucevic, Victor Oladipo, Elfrid Payton, Mario Hezonja, and then they would have about a $5.7 million cap hold for Evan Fournier, who they then could extend in restricted free agency. That's a pretty darn good young core. You could make two max offers, basically. They could dump Watson or stretch him even because he has two more years on his contract. You could get him down from $5 million to about $1 million for his number. You could make two max offers to guys in the 7 to 9 year experience range, or you could really try to load up on some other veterans, or you kind of just roll that space over a little bit longer into 2017, which is going to be a little bit better of a free agent market, even though you'll have had to deal with extensions for Fournier before that. That'll be on the books, but I don't think anything else will. You'll have Oladipo's cap hold as he'll be eligible for an extension in 2017. So you can say, hey, we have all these young guys who are cheap. We opened up a further basically $25 million in room by dumping Fry and Tobias Harris. That actually could be very useful to add to that core. I mean, that's the thought, is all these guys are cheap. You add some veterans. The veterans might age and get overpaid, but then the young guys are getting better. And Scott Skiles wanted some more veterans. Or you could even re-sign Jennings and Ilyasova for another year or two, kind of try to roll the space over into 2017. That's what they're thinking. On the other hand, though, I agree with you that Fry, who we'll get to, and Harris, you probably could have gotten more for those guys, at least would have hoped to get more for those guys. But I appreciate the overall strategy, despite the fact that maybe they didn't get quite as much for those guys as they should have.
I see the logic. I appreciate the sentiment behind it. And if it were a year other than 2016, I would see something to it. Orlando is a team it's a franchise in a city that has some appeal for free agents. They've competed for players before. They were the most serious suitor to Tim Duncan that has ever happened. It didn't, you know, they didn't end up getting him, but they were close. They got Grant Hill. They got Tracy McGrady. But 2016, so many teams are going to have money. And so let's say Kevin Durant's not going there, which I think is a fair assumption to make. Of course, if they get him, that changes this whole thing. Are there players, not only in terms of just getting proper value, but in terms of players who make sense with this group of individuals in this free agent class? I mean, DeMar DeRozan doesn't make any sense with this team. Al Horford is at the wrong timeline. He's, of course, a wonderful player. Mike Conley, same timeline issue. Dwight Howard, lots of issues. So, yeah, it's nice to have this space, but you're going to be doing that, and there are obviously a nice market for restricted free agents. I mean, theoretically, they would be a nice team to offer Harrison Barnes, but your chances of getting those guys, considering how crazy this market's going to be, is pretty low. So I think that the logic is sound. It's just not the right time for it.
Yeah, I get you there, too, and maybe that you could have gotten more for Harris over the summer. I mean, just basically straight up dumping Harris. I mean, they are pretty much out of the playoff race right now. Maybe they've deluded themselves that's not actually true, that they could get back into it. But I think that really rough January has basically put them out of it from an odds standpoint, any reasonable mathematical understanding. I mean, and I do think Harris could have been overrated. They played well without him. I also think that this can now allow Aaron Gordon's role to crystallize a little bit with this team, really playing more of the four, or playing with a guy like Ilyasova who doesn't need the ball and can space out while he operates closer to the basket, even though he's playing the three, guard the other team's best wing threat. I think all that, you know, maybe play him along someone like Hezonja or Fournier to get enough shooting on the floor. I think all that is something that's really going to help them. I think that moving Harris was totally fine. Moving Fry was totally fine. But just to get basically a second round pick out of that via Portland, we don't know which one it is yet, I don't think, is disappointing to me, especially when you consider what someone like, say, Markieff Morris got, was traded for, some of the Demo, another guy. I mean, granted, those guys aren't making as much as Harris, but he's younger and has the potential to be better than either of those guys. So, yeah, I agree ultimately with you. It's not that great of a trade in isolation. I do think that it could end up not really hurting them that badly, but it would just be really nice if they had another first rounder in the coffers as a result of having traded Harris and they did not get one.
Or taking a flyer on some young guy that the other teams involved in the two trades they did just didn't really care about, you know, just Darren Hilliard or somebody like that, just to have a chance at it. I mean, because they didn't even get something like that. You think about just the value that the Spurs are getting from Jonathan Simmons. I mean, obviously that's an aberration, but just somebody who could be a useful piece for them on a cheap contract.
So let's get to the Fry trade now, with Orlando being the common thread there. Cleveland gives up a 2018 first rounder, which was the earliest one that they could give up. That almost certainly will go because they have their 2016 that's traded, but that's only top 10 protected this year. So that's going to go. 2018 will then be the year. It is top 10 protected for 2018 and 19. You have to imagine that they won't be in the top 10 if they still have LeBron James and Kyrie Irving on the roster by that point, even with James kind of in decline now. So Fry, let's talk first about the Cleveland part. And then they also gave up Jared Cunningham to the Magic, who I assume is going to be waived. Doesn't really factor into this too much. Just they had to send something to the Magic because all three teams have to quote unquote touch each other in a three-team trade. What do you think about this trade from Cleveland's perspective? Getting Fry, getting a trade exception for Varejao. They took Fry into the trade exception for Brendan Haywood. How much does Fry help them, number one? And number two, just how is this in sort of the grand asset exchange evaluation?
It's interesting because Fry is not a perfect fit with their existing talent, meaning that he overlaps with Kevin Love. And as much as you and I have talked about our passion for the Vucevic Fry combination, Love Fry could even be worse defensively. But he's a nice complement to just the overall spacing of this team. I mean, you can think of a lot of more different lineups that he can help in. You know, as a guy who can play center, who can play a little bit of power forward, and to be able to get out of Anderson Varejão's contract for the remainder of this year and next year. So basically, you're actually getting a discount with Channing Frye is a really nice part of this for them. It lowers their tax bill in the immediate. It's a lower price for next year for a player who can contribute substantially more than somebody who is contributing nothing. And at the point I believe you brought it up on Twitter during it that I think is a really important facet of this is that he's also Mozgov insurance, because now you have another guy who is a useful player who you have under contract, he can't leave, and you have him around. And so if Mozgov leaves, if you want to make a trade for Kevin Love, what he brings in terms of spacing at a big man position, you already have somebody, so that allows you to be a little bit more flexible in case you want to make that move in the summer. So it's not a perfect thing. I mean, they did give up something, but a late first in a distant draft is probably not as heavy a price as what we're going to see, what we saw from Washington and what we saw from Detroit. So it's a good trade for Cleveland. It's not a game changer, but it's nice.
In the early part of this decade, it was basically 10 million bucks of salary, dead salary, equaled one first round pick. You had trades like the Richard Jefferson, Steven Jackson trades, when the Warriors dumped guys like Biedrins and Rush to and then Jefferson again to get Andre Iguodala. That was the standard. The cap was a lot lower then. And basically, because you don't really count Varejão's 9.6 million for this year, because Portland needed to basically acquire more salary to get up to the salary floor anyway. That Portland is actually saving money by acquiring Varejão. So that doesn't really count. Now you've basically got his $9.3 million guaranteed next year. It's been reported that Varejão is probably going to be waived. And Portland Cleveland had to give up a first-round pick to dump that. So that's doing pretty darn well for Portland from that perspective. But then you also look at the fact that this was the only trading partner that could just completely absorb Varejão's salary, creating a new traded player exception without sending anything back to Cleveland. Also, the fact that they're in the tax and just getting Fry and dumping Cunningham reduced their team salary by about $2.5 million. That saves them $9 million in luxury taxes, plus about another million or so for the third of the year difference in that $2.5 million, a little bit more than a third of the year. So there's that for Cleveland. And then there's the fact that not only are you expending that first rounder just to dump Anderson Varejão, but you're also getting Fry, who I think is a very useful player, one of the most underrated players in the league these last few years. Last year was a lost year for him. He was injured, but he was in the top 20 in ESPN's RPM when he was on the Suns in 2013-14. Very underrated factor in why they succeeded, and the loss of him is a very underrated factor in why they've kind of taken a step back since then. And he's in the top 50 in RPM this year as well. His shooting and ability to hold up okay defensively and on the boards at the center position is a real weapon. And if you wanted to go with an awesome all-offense lineup with Fry at center, Love at power forward, now you've got LeBron James posting up, bullying whatever poor defender is trying to guard him. If you double-team, you can kick it out to those two bigs for a three, and you're still going to be okay on the boards defensively. I don't think that Fry and Love is a great defensive combination against the Warriors. Maybe a little bit better against the Spurs, who are going to kind of try and post up and bully you a little bit more. But I think Fry is pretty good. And Mozgov hasn't been that good this year. But if he was, they wouldn't have really had a way to replace him. And they could have been looking at up to $15 million for him as an average starter, probably less now with the year that he's had. But still, now you're not over a barrel the way you were with Tristan Thompson, where you have to overpay Mozgov. You can just sort of, all right, if we want to keep you, we'll keep you, if it makes financial sense. Otherwise, you know, goodbye, see you later. We got Channing Frye, who's probably, you know, a better player than Mozgov overall over the last few years.
One of the other aspects of this, which I really enjoyed, and you hear about this at various points in basketball, is Dave McMenamin tweeted out that David Griffin said that Channing Frye was somebody who was actually originally going to join Cleveland in 2014, but when LeBron came back and changed their cap math, they couldn't sign him anymore. And you do find that with GMs that really like players and like their fit. Eventually, they find their way there. And I mean, the Skiles moves, actually, because he'd coached Brandon Jennings and Ilyasova in Milwaukee, you see that around the league where if you're comfortable with somebody, if you like somebody, they'll find their way back.
That's a great point, too. And another point as well, we talked about the savings for Cleveland already. If they can either get Mozgov for cheaper or just not have to re-sign him at all, and then you still have the trade exception that you could bring someone in instead of Mozgov, now you're saving a ton of money as well for next year, when they are very likely to also be in the tax. So I think this is a good trade for both teams. Let's look at it a little bit more from the Portland perspective now. They got this top 10 protected pick. They had to send out a second. We don't know which one yet that went to Orlando. So they are now going to have about $25 million or so in room for 2016. That includes the cap holds for Allen Crabb and Myers Leonard. So if they'll have a chance to take a run at someone who could get a max contract. Again, there aren't that many of those guys. We've established that. Or someone who could be a decent rim protector for them, trying to improve their defense a little bit. And then maybe they end up re-signing Crabb and Leonard and going over the cap a little bit. Or you can still sort of play the game of continuing to be below the cap and with that approach. But if they make the playoffs this year or come close, maybe they will be more buyers than we would have expected. And they basically went from $20 million in cap room now, and now they have $8 million. They were $13.8 million under the salary floor. Now they're only $800,000 under the salary floor. So they saved themselves a ton of money, basically, because they're only paying one third or so, since that's how much of the season is left, of that $13.8 million that they essentially absorbed. So it makes a ton of financial sense for them, and they get a first round pick for their trouble. Very good trade for Portland. I think that's about as good as you could have expected to do. And then they also got the second from Miami, which we'll get to in a second in the Brian Roberts trade.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit uncomfortable with the way that the cap math rules work, that a team can do what they did and basically save as much money. But those are the rules, and you have to take advantage of it if you have it. And one,
yeah, you
go ahead.
Oh no, I was going to say I agree with you in the sense that it doesn't make me uncomfortable from the player's standpoint.
Oh, agreed.
Because remember, they're going to get paid regardless, right? Like if the teams don't pay out enough money to them, then the NBA basically just cuts the players' association a check, and all the players get their escrow money back, and then they might get more money on top of that. That's what happened last year. The teams that it's unfair to are the teams that actually are spending a lot of money this year, because Portland is basically going to outlay very little, but all of the teams have to essentially cut a check to the NBAPA to make up for what Portland or, you know, some of these other teams like Philly or whatever did not spend of their share. So that's kind of where the unfairness comes in.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I kind of expressed a little bit of frustration at what Portland did. What I realized after, and this is something we dealt with in the mock offseason we did, is there wasn't a great market for teams to really take that money to be that financial buffer. And you look at what Memphis did, you know, they helped out. They did some of the heavy lifting with what Miami did to get out of their cap, and they didn't get as good a return as Portland did. So, yeah, I mean, you think intuitively, oh, you have an idea of what this is worth in your head. And they, you know, they might have gotten lower than that in my head, but they did a really nice job doing it when you really think about what market was out there at the time.
Should we get to Miami now? One of the most impressive tax avoidance jobs that we've seen in the last few years. They are now out of the tax, out of the dreaded repeater tax. That will no longer be an issue for them until the 2019-2020 season, because they're not going to be in the tax next year, almost certainly, since their plan is to use cap space. Let's just kind of go through what they did to get under.
Sure. So it started with the three-way trade that was on, I believe, was that Tuesday? Was the...
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Tuesday. So they were kind of an ancillary part of the deal, and their portion of it was that they sent Birdman, Chris Anderson, and I believe two second-round picks, one of which is top 55 protected, to Memphis, and they got Brian Roberts, who was a cheaper $2.8 million from the Hornets.
Yeah, and that was, I think, really the linchpin of this deal. They gave up a second to dump essentially $3 million in salary. But the fact was that Roberts can probably play a little bit more than Birdman, and just that he's making only $2.8 million. A lot more teams have trade exceptions. A lot more teams might be willing to just take on his salary for the last part of the season. So that was sort of the big move. And then they sent another second now, their 2021 second, which was the only one that they had left at that point, to Portland to dump Roberts. And I think Roberts actually can help Portland a little bit this year. He's an upgrade on Tim Frazier, whom they waived, and he can play off the ball a little bit, can still shoot, not much of a defensive player, but an okay third point guard. And, you know, just so that they don't have to have CJ McCollum and Lillard on the floor for every single second, that it might help them a little bit. Or he can play alongside Lillard or McCollum because he can shoot the ball a little bit. He's 30, so he, I mean, it's not great shakes. Probably not someone you're really that excited about re-signing or anything, but still someone who can help a team a little bit, you know, maybe more than someone like Frazier, who, you know, no one ever guarded.
I would much rather have Brian Roberts than the player that the Hawks, the point guard the Hawks acquired.
I actually disagree with you on that. I would rather have Kirk Heinrich than than Brian Roberts. But I think Heinrich is actually, you know, everyone kind of loathes him because he's like, you know, the teddy bear of Chicago management for so long. But I think actually when he's playing point guard, he can be somewhat effective. But that's getting kind of far afield here. Miami also sent Jarnell Stokes along with cash to New Orleans for what is no doubt a funny money top 55 protected second rounder. Stokes is a guy who hasn't really gotten a chance to play at all, but graded out extremely well by the statistical translations that were available when he came out of college in the 2014 draft, and has continued to kill it in the D-League. He leads the D-League in PR right now with a 30 PR. So, and I think that he actually can fit pretty well next to Anthony Davis. His limitation is that he's, you know, kind of a beefier big guy, really is more of a center offensively, but then, you know, is not going to protect the rim. So Davis's versatility with the his ability to protect the rim defensively and also shoot the ball, they could actually work okay together. So I like that for New Orleans. I didn't like the rest of their day, that's for sure. We'll get to that. But I thought that that was pretty good. And Miami, yeah, they did pretty well to get out of the tax. I mean, you can always just buy some more second rounders for all the money that they're saving. But they are kind of taking on a little bit of a Brooklyn Nets from a couple years ago kind of quality at this point to me.
There is a risk of that, and the big question with that is what they're willing to give Dwayne Wade. And we have talked before about their weird situation with Hassan Whiteside, which did not resolve today. And so they're in this kind of weird place of what are they going to do with their cap money, but assuming they use it on long-term pieces, they're going to be committed to their core unless they can make some sort of other ancillary move, you know, if they trade Dragic or something like that. And that core will not age super well. So that's a concern, but at the same time, I'm not ready to foreclose on the opportunity of Miami doing better with their cap space than Hassan Whiteside.
Yeah, that's a good point there, too. I mean, the parallel with Brooklyn is they basically traded now every pick that they can, except they haven't traded the swap rights. And they've kind of got a bunch of names who maybe don't fit together all that well, are kind of injury prone, sadly, especially in the case of Chris Bosh. You know, a little bit overrated, not necessarily a championship contender, kind of a team that's going to top out as like a mid-tier East seed unless more moves can be made. And of course, unless Bosh comes back. I mean, if this turns out to be a career threatening issue for him with these additional blood clots, then they're really in trouble. Although they eventually would probably get a long-term injury exception for him. I don't want to have to think about that though at the moment. The difference, though, as you noted, is they can have cap space this summer. If they can convince Wade to take less this year, they are a free agent destination, probably even more so than Brooklyn. But they are putting a lot of eggs into that free agent basket now. And if that doesn't work out, and this is sort of their team that's just going to get older, and they don't really have anyone who's young other than Justice Winslow, maybe Tyler Johnson on the team, that's not going to be enough to kind of get you back into contention either. They could sort of just be into this long, slow decline without any assets to improve. I mean, they really have just traded away everything that's not nailed down at this point.
Yeah. Do we want to talk about New Orleans, or not New Orleans? They're the Hornets now in Charlotte. Charlotte's part of this deal?
Yeah, we should. What did you think of it? They basically gave up 2 second rounders and Brian Roberts to get Courtney Lee. What were the picks that they got? It was
they gave up their own second in 2018, so a couple years out, and Brooklyn's in 2019.
So that's pretty good, actually. You know, it's nothing that's that close. I mean, you basically take a discount for any pick that's further into the future. That's just kind of how it works. And, you know, I think Brooklyn will probably still be pretty bad in 2019. That could be a pretty decent one. And then Hairston wasn't part of their long-term plans anyway. You know, they're kind of tired of dealing with him from an attitude standpoint, per a lot of reports. And then their own second round pick, you know, they've got a pretty young roster right now. They should still be okay then. It's not a ton to give up. So you're looking at, you know, maybe like two picks that'll average out around 40. I think that's actually great. I think Courtney Lee is better than pretty much any of those expiring contract wing guys who were traded last year, and he'll also really help them.
he'll really help them. And sadly, with Michael Kidd-Gilchrist being out, they needed somebody who can do what he can do. And he's another possibility for them. You never know what his free agent market's going to be. Maybe he'll have a great time there. They did just get Jeremy Lin to take what we all thought was a discount to go there. And he's a nice basketball player. I think that if one of Charlotte's goals is to be relevant and potentially make the playoffs this year, he definitely makes that more realistic. And while we both were critical of the Hornets declining the option on PJ Hairston, once they did that, his value to their team was very limited because they can't go over his basically what his option year would have been to re-sign him. It's the same issue that New Orleans had with Austin Rivers. So to kind of use him to a degree as an asset is another nice thing for them because it was going to be very challenging to re-sign him.
Lee will probably start at the two for them. He's a guy who shoots like 38% or something career on threes. He'll fit right into what they're trying to do on offense with the amount of threes that they're shooting. He can guard some of the better wing threats. Batum will have to take kind of the taller guys, and that'll be a little bit of a problem because neither of those guys probably can handle some of the bigger wings in the playoffs. But, you know, this wasn't a perfect solution for them. And as you noted, he's someone that they could potentially re-sign as more of a backup to if they also bring back Nicola Batum, or he could be insurance for if they re-sign him if Batum were to leave. All that, I think, is really good. He's just a heady veteran presence, good guy, and can kind of just keep the spacing train rolling for them. I mean, he's an enormous upgrade over the minutes that Hairston was going to have to be playing.
Exactly. And so it's a move for them that, you know, there isn't that much of a risk. And I would say for me, Brooklyn, by the 2018-19 season, I think they'll have had enough bites at the apple to have figured something out. So, you know, I don't think that's going to be a top five pick in the second round. And those are the ones where you really get that value, like Chetty Osman, who hasn't brought over to the Cavs, but guys like that, Pekovic, you know, those are where you really get the value in the second.
Let's talk about the Memphis side of this deal and then that other coup that they had today.
I'm smiling already.
But let's start about this deal. They essentially got four second rounders for Courtney Lee. The two that we talked about, the one from Miami is a 2017 second round that's top 40 protected. If that does not go, it'll turn into just a 2018 second rounder unprotected. And then they also got a top 55 Boston second rounder from the Zoran Dragic trade that basically is never going to happen unless the Celtics finish with a top five best record in 2019, which could happen. But nonetheless, that's a pretty worthless pick to be that late in the round anyway, even if it does go. So you're basically talking about three second rounders for Courtney Lee. They probably, you know, the Miami one will probably be 45 or something like that. Could end up being a lot later. And then you've got kind of those, that Brooklyn one is probably the best one. That's not until 2019. But this kind of replenishes the assets a little bit, as does the Green for Stevenson and a first rounder trade, because Memphis was out a couple of first rounders. And I think this also, this attitude, although it hasn't been an official announcement yet, kind of presages that the Marc Gasol news is not going to be too good. And because they are certainly taking a step back this year without Lee, maybe even without Green, although I think that there's an argument that Lance Stevenson might be as good as Green. But I think that I like this for Memphis. I like the fact that their ownership was willing to be a little bit more realistic in the wake of the Gasol injury, kind of replenish the stocks and acknowledge that Lee was and Green were expiring contracts and they should just try and get something for him.
They got more long-term assets for basically taking on a little bit of money and what I could consider largely flotsam than Orlando did for what they traded. That's really good.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, that Courtney Lee on an expiring contract could get more than Fry
and Tobias Harris.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's a question of whether you consider Ilyasova and Jennings to be worth anything, which I think maybe they do. But I agree with you. I think that they did well. I mean, if we're going to compare everything to Fry and Harris, everything's going to look good, I guess. But Fry with on that declining deal, granted, you know, he's getting into, you know, being 32, 33, and I think he was 34 by the end of that deal. But with the cap going up so much, that's like really not worth anything. I think I would have thought that he'd be worth more than Courtney Lee because his contract expires. But I guess that was not the case. I mean, I think it's just good overall for the Grizzlies to get these assets. But let's get to the Stevenson for Green trade. This one came in just under the wire, and it was reported at first, it appeared that it was just a straight up swap. And I was actually like, oh, yeah, you know, I kind of get why Memphis would do that. That actually makes sense. And then I think it came in from Mark Stein that, oh, yeah, the Clippers are trading their first available first rounder as well, and that was almost comical to me.
Rock Devers never disappoints.
And, you know, he had Jeff Green in Boston. Green has been kind of thought to be really the missing piece now. This will be the third time that he's been kind of traded in these circumstances to a team that fancies itself at least a pseudo contender. And he disappointed in Boston. His on-off numbers have always been terrible. He disappointed in Memphis. They traded a first-round pick for him. His on-off numbers have been terrible there. He's never been that good of a shooter. He had a horrible playoffs last year. And now he's moving on to the Clippers. And let's take it from the Clippers' perspective. You think there's any way that this works out well for them? Let's not talk about the first round pick. Let's just talk about having him on the team for this year.
So, yeah, I mean, you could make an argument that he's a better player than, you know, than Lance Stephenson, though Lance, I think, has come on a little bit the last couple weeks. And, you know, depending on how you want to play him with Paul Pierce, former teammate Paul Pierce, you know, maybe you can balance their defensive assignments a little bit. What I found kind of adorable after it happened was Clippers fans talking about, they're like, oh, it's nice to have a 3-and-D forward. And no.
Yeah, he doesn't really do either of those things too well. He just, you know, he looks like he would be a good defender, right? Like he's pretty cut, like he's 6'9", can jump pretty well when he's going to the basket off of 1 foot, even as he's getting to be 29 now. But yeah, I mean, it just, you would be, other than just looking at his body and how he jumps, it's almost impossible to make an argument that he is really a good defensive player. You know, he'd probably hold up a little better than Paul Pierce would. But, you know, he's definitely not the answer. I mean, maybe they feel like they can re-sign him with his bird rights. That was potentially an appeal. But let's put it this way. If he becomes like a key piece that really helps them, I'll be very surprised, because he's 29 and he just really has not been that at any point in his career up until now.
And now the Clippers have two terrifying potential re-signing guys in him and Austin Rivers, because, you know, Austin Rivers can opt out of his thing and they'll have full bird rights on him and they can give him money. And so if I were a Clippers fan, you'd be sitting there going, oh God, they're a team that has very limited tools to get better in terms of spending, because assuming now they have their core together, they're not going to clear one of those guys for cap space now. Then you're sitting there going, oh, well, we might as well pay these guys, especially if, let's say, they win their first round series and say they have a good showing against the Warriors in the second round, that you're going to be sitting there and going, instead of it being like a short-term mistake, that it could become something bigger than that.
Yeah, that's a good point too, especially considering his advancing age. That 2019 pick, of course, was the first pick that they could trade, because they already traded away 2015 to get Doc Rivers. That doesn't matter anymore for the Stepien rule, but it's worth kind of noting for the history and why they don't really have any good young contracts on their books anymore. 2017 was sent to Milwaukee in the Jared Dudley salary dump, when Dudley actually turned out to be a really valuable player these last 2 years. And so now, and I think that one is lottery protected, I want to say. So that'll probably still go in 2017. Hard to imagine the Clippers missing the playoffs next year. And then, so this one will probably go in 2019. And it's just, you know, the Clippers certainly have gotten nothing out of their first round picks lately. But just because they haven't doesn't mean that they should give them up. And I think even if you are of the philosophy that we as an organization think that first round picks are worthless, you can still trade them away to get stuff that's worthwhile. And Jeff Green is just, I feel like they could have done so much better if they really were, like, wouldn't Courtney Lee be more helpful? I mean, I guess he's more of a two than a three, but there had to be someone else out there that could have helped them. I mean, that pick, maybe they could have even gotten like someone like Ryan Anderson for that pick. Although who knows? I mean, New Orleans didn't trade him ultimately, so maybe they weren't willing to trade him for something like that. But I think they could have done better for a first rounder than Jeff Green, that's for darn sure.
Well, especially considering they also could have gotten Channing Frye basically for nothing. Like,
yeah, Frye would have been better. I mean, I guess the report was that they were concerned, and Frye would have been an unbelievable fit, because then you'd sub him in for DJ, and now you can play pick and roll with Blake Griffin, being more of like the rim roller dunker instead of kind of the playmaker with Frye spaced out. I think he would have been fantastic for the Clippers. They supposedly were worried about those last 2 years on his contract, but presumably he at least would have been dumpable in the summer if you were really worried about that. So I think that would have been certainly a much better option than Jeff Green.
Don't you wish they'd done this trade for Jared Dudley? Wouldn't that have been fun? But then we wouldn't have gotten Lance Stephenson on the Grizzlies, who are now, I think Sean Hyken said this, that they're the island of misfit toys. And it's just going to be so much fun to watch this combination of human beings be a basketball team for a couple months.
You know, I don't know. I don't get it. Everybody on NBA Twitter, like, kind of just loves certain guys for, oh, Zach Randolph. Can you imagine Lance Stephenson and Matt Barnes? Like, that somehow, like, guys having sort of weird reputations or being kind of difficult to deal with, but also can be, like, lovable guys at the same time. Like, that somehow is, like, makes them more exciting to watch. I don't really think so, personally. Like, I'm not, like, incredibly excited. But I do think that an underrated aspect of this is now Lance, the evidence is certainly mounting that he's not that good, you know, over the past year and a half. But he's going to get his chance in Memphis. They can use some scoring. They can use some additional playmaking. Now they could use a guy who can defend a little bit better on the wing. And maybe he proves himself to where they actually, like, want to keep his salary for next year as well, rather than trying to get into free agency if it feels like they can't get anything else. And I think they should be okay this year. I think they'll still make the playoffs. I mean, what is their rotation now? Let's just kind of go through it, because they've made so many moves. I mean, you've got Conley at the one. Are you
Chalmers.
Starting? Yeah. I mean, Chalmers, I guess, is the backup point guard. They've got Tony Allen. They've got Stevenson. And they're definitely going to still struggle for shooting. Lee was pretty important.
Barnes,
with
PJ
his shooting.
Harrison.
Yeah, I mean, all those wing guys. I mean, Barnes is probably the best shooter of those guys, which is a little bit of a concern. Brandon Wright is supposed to be back now soon. I think that'll help them a little bit, but they don't necessarily have the spacing to play pick and roll around him. I mean, I think you will probably see a lot of Chalmers and Conley together just to get enough shooting on the floor. They got Zebo. Who else am I forgetting?
I'm having trouble thinking of that.
Jermichael Green.
Oh, yeah, Jermichael Green's all right.
Yeah, that's about it. I mean, it's going to be a little bit of a mismatched roster, and they actually had been playing pretty well offensively. But again, you know, I think getting the assets into the future, more important now with Gasol, you know, probably either going to be, especially because a broken foot is just for a big guy, it's not the kind of thing you want to rush back for in what was going to be a hopeless playoff endeavor for them anyway. So I definitely think that this was the right move for them, even if they are going to take a step back. And I still think they are probably going to make the playoffs. But that's important, because if the pick that they owe to Denver falls within 6-14, that actually goes this year. So if they miss the playoffs, then they're going to lose their first rounder as well.
Can I talk about the Denver dream scenario? Because we're getting close to it.
Oh, yeah. Let's hear it.
Okay. So Denver has Portland's pick if they make the playoffs. They have Houston's pick if they make the playoffs. And they have Memphis's pick if they miss the playoffs. That possibility is on the table now.
Yeah, and Denver also has the swap rights with the Knicks. So they actually have a little bit better of a chance of vaulting into the top three than they would have had either for a team that's actually playing okay this year. So, yeah, that's they could get a lot of youth on their roster. And I'm a little surprised they didn't try to make more of a move. But with all these picks that are out there now, maybe it makes sense that you wouldn't want to necessarily trade someone like Danilo Gallinari for more picks. You already have plenty coming.
Yeah, you have a lot of them. You don't want to necessarily get into the Minnesota situation where you have to coalesce or do things because you just have too many young guys.
All right, let's do a little small one here. Kirk Heinrich and to the Hawks for Justin Holiday and a second rounder. We still haven't gotten any information on that second rounder yet, have we? I would imagine it's probably not a particularly impressive one.
So what I think the Bulls press release said is, this is actually kind of technically a three-way trade, is that the pick that Utah was going to send originally to Atlanta for Shelvin Mack is the pick that is going to Chicago in this trade. And
okay.
That is a 2018 pick, which, if it is 2018, which is what was in the press release, would be either Utah's own pick or Denver's pick, which are the two they hold at that time.
Perfect. Okay, good. Glad we cleared that up. I can't see I see a ton of motivation in making this trade from Atlanta's standpoint, though.
Nope.
I mean,
Justin Holiday was on a reasonable contract. You know, if he were on a worse deal, then you go, oh yeah, you get out of the second guaranteed year. But he was making the minimum guaranteed next year.
Yeah, I think I would rather have a second rounder than Kirk Heinrich at this point, because they already have two point guards on the team and they haven't traded either of them. You know, if they had traded away Schroeder or Teague, then maybe this works. So Kirk Heinrich is going to be your backup point guard. I do think he's actually not terrible as a backup point guard. But what I've also, maybe they're contemplating playing him at shooting guard, which would be a complete disaster because he's just so much of a non-threat offensively. I mean, they're familiar with him from his first go around there, you know, back when they were making the playoffs on some of those Mike Woodson or Larry Drew teams. Can't remember who was the coach at that point. But yeah, it really does not make a ton of sense to me why you would need to basically replace Shelvin Mack with Kirk Heinrich when, you know, you already have two point guards that play the whole game. I mean, unless they're just going to totally give up on Schroeder and just play Kirk Heinrich at the backup point guard instead, or maybe they just need someone who's better than Sheldon Mack was to actually be able to say to Schroeder, hey, we're going to not play you unless you play the right way. But that all of that really seems like fairly nebulous benefits to me.
Yeah, that's a pretty scary type of logic if that's what you have to reach to justify a trade. And from the Bulls' perspective, I think it's really nice. You know, they were able to get a guy who's a rotation player. Of course, somehow they made their point guard depth worse, which is...
Well, hold on. Is Holiday a rotation player? He wasn't a rotation player for the Hawks.
Yeah, he's a fringy guy. He has that potential, and he makes no money, so...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we could talk about his game a little bit. He's under contract for $1 million this year, $1 million next year. That is actually fully guaranteed, though.
Right.
And his problem is that he just can't dribble at all. And his shooting, you know, he had like a hot streak early on in the year with the Warriors last year, but really never in his career has he shot all that well from three. And he can't dribble. And, you know, maybe his form looks good. Like, you think maybe he could be a decent shooter. It's worth getting a look at him, especially for a perpetually wing-starved team like the Bulls. His defense is solid. He's really skinny, though. He can't guard threes. He really can probably only guard twos. So, yeah, I mean, give him a shot and see if, you know, he can supplant Tony Snell. That seems fine. Although now you're basically down to Aaron Brooks and nobody else. This is a team that, with Derrick Rose's physical limitations and the fact that he just shouldn't be playing that many minutes, if Rose is out, then you're just Aaron Brooks and, like, there's nobody else on the roster who can play point guard. Then you're going to Etwan Moore, who is not a point guard. So I am a little worried. Maybe they think they can get somebody on the buyout or someone they like in the D League or whatever. But, you know, I'm not actually – I mean, I think for this year, Heinrich is probably more important than Holiday would have been. The Bulls do save $3 million, and they do get that second rounder, and they're out a couple because they had traded some to Orlando to dump Anthony Randolph in the summer of 2014. So, I don't know. I mean, this is ultimately not that big of a trade, but one that kind of doesn't make a ton of sense in a couple of ways. What did you think about the aspect of Utah getting Shelvin Mack for that second rounder?
It's fine. He's not my favorite player in terms of just an extra point guard to have, but he's certainly not bad, and he's an expiring contract. Well, he has a non-guaranteed next year, actually, I believe.
Yeah.
So you can evaluate him. If he works out well, then you can bring him back. But, you know, like, if it, in the mock thing, I gave them Ronnie Price. You know, it's kind of the same type of deal. It's just a steward. And, you know, he's fine in that role. And if they couldn't do better than that, the thing that's a little bit weird is that they had this, but this is kind of a broader Utah thing, is that they had this cap space that they could have worked with. And they not only took in Shelvin Mack, you know, and did that, but they gave up a second round pick in the process. Not a huge second round pick. I think whether it's Utah's pick or Denver's pick, that sounds like a mid second to me. And it's not even this year or next year. It's 2018. So, you know, it's fine. It's not catastrophic. It's not great.
Yeah, I would have hoped if I were them that I could have maybe gotten in on... I mean, they have a billion second rounders already, though, I think. So maybe the idea of using their cap space was, you know, to take on more dead salary was not as appealing to them. But, you know, you would hope if you just kind of have this unused money that you could do a little bit better than actually someone like Shelvin Mack, and then not even picking up an asset, you're giving one up. So that's, you would hope they get a little bit more out of that. I think that ultimately the way in which Utah has used its space, even going back to the summer, has been a little bit disappointing. On the other hand, this is an organization that, if they kind of re-sign everyone that needs to be re-signed in the next few years, is going to have to get pretty close to the tax and could even be paying the tax if the system remains the same. So maybe that's kind of the thought too, is, hey, we're just going to save some money this year and, you know, apply it in future years when our roster is more expensive.
Yeah, I mean, I would rather have Brian Roberts and a second round pick than Shelvin Mack minus a second round pick, but it's not something that I feel so passionately about that I'm going to kill them for it. They're not the Magic.
All right, another kind of mini move, Randy Foy to OKC, 2 second rounders to Denver along with Steve Novak. Oklahoma City saves $9.3 million, $1.2 million in salary, and $8.1 million in tax, and also creates a trade player exception for Novak's salary. Denver was able to make this trade. They used cap room, but they also had a disabled player exception for Wilson Chandler that was worth $5.2 million, and that allowed them to acquire players in the last year of their contract, or free agents up to that amount. So they used $3 million of that disabled player exception. And DJ Augustin is gone now. It is just Campaign is the backup point guard. It'll be interesting to see how well he holds up in the playoffs. But they also then picked up Randy Foy, how much would you say that he helps them?
I like Foy. I think he's another option when they've been kind of in a sea of possibilities that aren't perfect for the position between Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. I don't think
Is he the best shooting guard on their team right now?
I think he deserves a chance, but I prefer Robertson when he's healthy, but it's not a clear-cut thing for me either way. But for me, first of all, I'll put in a cheap plug if you want to learn more about the disabled player exception. I wrote about it for the CBA Encyclopedia, so you can go. It's on Real GM. You can look at that, and it explains how it works. But for me, just in a broader perspective, I think this is a much better deal for Oklahoma City than it is for Denver. But you don't have to think of it as a winner and a loser. I just think that Oklahoma City got out of a lot of money that wasn't particularly helpful for them. They saved a lot. And they got a player who could be useful for them as opposed to two players who probably weren't.
Yeah. Do we know what those seconds are?
I don't know them off.
I haven't seen it yet. But, you know, if it's their own, then it's, it doesn't have any protection. That's a decent gamble for Denver. If Durant leaves, if Westbrook leads, those picks could end up getting to be pretty valuable. I do think that Foy, he can play in small lineups a little bit more than you might expect because he's just as randomly this really good post defender. I think he's probably a more reliable shooter than any of their options except for Anthony Morrow, at least from three. And, you know, he's not terrible defensively, but he's still pretty old. I mean, he's not really, you know, a great shooter or a great defender. I mean, but I could see him playing. He's not going to screw up, at least. You know, he's a good vet, good guy. A lot of people seem to really like him. He'd be a good locker room presence. So, you know, just another guy to kind of throw into that Oklahoma City meat wing grinder and hope that something sticks. You know, if Deion Waiters is taking bad shots, you know, you have an option to go with to replace him. You know, if Robertson's not being guarded in the playoffs, if Kyle Singler still can't hit anything, if Morrow is not defending, at least you have Foy is not a guy who I think he'll just be steady in most areas and that will help a little bit. But, you know, I certainly not like an overwhelming option that anybody in San Antonio or Golden State is going to be shaking in their boots over this acquisition, to be sure.
I think that's a good way to classify it. And also, a kind of a sleeper part of this deal is that if Jameer Nelson's issues are a little bit longer, DJ Augustine can really help the Nuggets. And we've talked before about their incentives potentially changing if they can get past the Knicks. And let's say the Knicks stumble a little bit. He could be a useful piece for them this year.
Yeah, he could be. I could also just see him getting bought out, frankly.
Sure, that's a possibility, too.
That might even make more sense. But, you know, it is helpful. He's a guy who can shoot the ball, which is something that they need a little bit, you know, especially if Moutier is not being guarded. But, you know, I don't think the rest of the season matters that much for Denver. Ultimately, I mean, I think it's more Toronto that would be feeling the pain if Denver does well this year because they have that swap with the Knicks. All right, we got one more here, right? The Markieff Morris.
The bigger one. Yeah, so Markieff Morris traded, which I think some of us saw coming. Markieff Morris traded to the Washington Wizards, which I don't think we saw coming. So the salary mix was DeJuan Blair and Chris Humphreys, but the bigger piece was Washington's 2016 first-round pick, which is protected, but is only protected 1 through 9.
Let's talk a little bit about that pick first, because that's what you love to talk about. Washington right now, per 538's projections, is supposed to have a 38-44 record. That would put them with the 12th pick. But the teams below them are the Magic, who by all accounts are going to be trying to make the playoffs. They're going to be trying. The Nuggets, who, as we noted, don't really have the incentive if the Knicks get behind them to tank at all. The Kings are going to be trying. The Bucks, they could be. The Pelicans, we don't know what they're doing yet. The Knicks are definitely going to be trying. They don't have their pick. So it definitely is possible, you know, they would have to get in front of the Magic, Nuggets, and Kings to get into that top 9 and keep their pick. You know, if they suffer an injury, like, you know, if Beal were to go out again or something like that, you could see them actually maybe trying to keep that. You know, John Wall might not be too happy about it. And, you know, they still are kind of trying to keep Durant, but if it becomes clear that that's not going to happen anyway, or I should say keep Durant, sign Durant.
Keep the hope alive.
Yeah, keep hope alive for Durant. That's what I meant. Thank you. So it's not impossible that they end up keeping this. I mean, they're obviously going to be trying for the playoffs themselves, but if it gets to the point where that looks impossible, we could see, you know, and Wall's kind of been playing through some knick-knack injuries too. You could see him kind of shutting it down maybe. And without him, they would really just go into the crapper immediately. So it's not totally impossible that they keep that pick. And the negotiations on exactly what number it was going to be, whether it's 9th, 8th, 10th, 11th, like those must have been really fascinating. I'd love to know how it was that they settled on 9th.
And something else to consider is that there isn't a realistic team ahead of them that's going to fall past them just because those teams are trying as well. Like, let's say even if the wheels fell off Chicago, Chicago is 4 wins ahead of them right now. Like, that's a lot of wins to be ahead of somebody with just 30 games to go. So, yeah, I mean, there's a possibility of it, and you laid out a reasonable case for it. However, I believe that Markieff Morris makes them meaningfully better right now. He's a player who can add some things that they've been missing, and I think that, you know, I don't think they're going to, you know, push all the way to the playoffs now, but I think he makes them better, and that makes it harder to fall as fast as they would need to, but of course it's still possible.
Yeah, whether this is a good trade or not depends on which Markieff you're getting, and Markieff had actually been playing much better in the 5 games since Earl Watson took over. He was averaging 20 a game. He had that one monster game with like 30 points. I forget who it was against. So, and this is a team that can use some scoring. Markieff, maybe if he gets into the right system, has the tools to be a decent defensive player and passer, you know, also kind of like a thirsty mid-range shooter at times. But presumably his attitude is going to be better now. That certainly is Washington's hope. And if you look at it, this is another instance of basically punting on cap space. The Suns designed Markieff's contract to go down to about $7.4 million this summer. And so that's really helpful. They still now will have up to $28.9 million in space this summer. If they hold on to Jared Dudley's cap hold, it would drop to $20 million. So they can still make a max offer if they want to. They'll have 6 players under contract, including Markieff, and also including Brad Beal. If you want to, he won't be under contract, but they'll have his cap hold. He'll count, and presumably they'll re-sign him. So, yeah, I think that doing better than, you know, a 3-year $23 million contract for someone like Markieff Morris with that cap space this summer, I don't think would have been possible. I think that is fair. It's just, now, is it fair to give up a first round pick for the privilege? I am not sure that anyone else would have been willing to offer quite this much, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
And they were in a challenging place because I'm sure that Phoenix could have astutely said, hey, you know, if you're going to protect it stronger this year, we think you're going to be so great next year that that pick is going to be a lot less valuable to us. And then, oh, we can think about this other real or fake team that is interested in us. And so you go, oh, well, we need to make it more realistic. But yeah, I think that one of the distinct benefits, and we've seen this with the power forwards that moved, is that Markieff's specific value to the Wizards is that his salary is low enough for next season that it keeps the Durant dream alive, at least a little bit, you know, that he's not going to prevent it. And that is something that would not have been true for Tobias Harris. That is something that would have been true for Channing Frye, but Channing Frye doesn't really move the needle like Markieff Morris does for them. And so you get somebody who is a talented player and who kind of fits with those things. Yeah, there is, as he was part of what inspired the term disaster potential. Like, there is that there. So I can see both sides of it. But from a basketball perspective, I'm really interested in this because he gets to play with a point guard who, once they have the time to develop a chemistry, I think will maybe even help his shot selection by giving him the ball in better spots. And they haven't had a power forward like him this year, and that was part of what made them good last year.
Another big component of this, outside of Markieff's attitude, is just, is he going to be able to shoot three-pointers? Well, he had some really nice plays in these last few games where he's actually like coming off screens and shooting threes. Like, it looked real good. You never know, though, just those flashes. Like, you just need a larger sample size to evaluate shooting like that. And he's always been a little bit disappointing from three compared to his brother, who you always kind of think of at the same time. But, you know, if you can have him as a guy who can actually rebound a little bit, you know, that'll help. Like, they've just been a horrible defensive rebounding team. And you have him around Wall and Gortat pick and roll spacing the floor, or he can get into a pick and roll as well, have Gortat in the dunker position, and then he can kind of try and make some plays from up top, or with your second unit that, you know, has never been able to score when Wall's off the floor. You can go to him for some offense against backups, especially if the other team is playing small at power forward. You have a lot of options with him, but I think that shooting, whether that ever truly develops into him being, you know, a 35% or better 3-point shooter on a decent volume, that's going to, what's going to ultimately make or break this trade, assuming that he doesn't have any more like massive attitude problems. Phoenix did pretty well here, though, didn't they?
They did incredibly well. And the way that I like to think about this is, you know, like, let's say that they hadn't traded him this year, and they walked into next year, even when teams are thirsty because they have so much space, and said, here's Markieff Morris, what do you give up? I think it's very unlikely they get something as good as that back. And so that makes it a really good return. And while there are other things about what Phoenix did that are surprising, this they did a very good job on.
Yeah, Phoenix now adds more to their treasure trove of picks. They are really second now, I think, only to maybe you could say they're about the same as Denver, but Boston still is the leader in the clubhouse in that category. But
Phillies too.
Yeah. I guess Phoenix is definitely still in that conversation about making a trade for a star. I mean, you can say they did well compared to maybe a month ago, if you are wondering what they would get for Markieff. They did really well in promoting Watson to showcase him and get him to actually start playing. It's pretty shameful how he wasn't playing. I mean, frankly, given what he's done over these past five games compared to what he was doing earlier in the year under Hornacek. But he got his trade done. Still, you would say that if he plays the way he's capable, this is going to be a clear win for the Wizards having him under contract like this. So maybe they are losers in that sense, but compared to where these conversations have been a little bit ago, you know, getting a pick that, you know, you probably project as like 12th, 13th pick, something like that. That's pretty darn good. I mean, they drafted Devin Booker with the 13th pick last year. That's atypical, but I think they've generally done reasonably well with their drafting. And, and it also clears out a roster spot for kind of more young guys to go in. And they will now have $29.5 million in cap room this summer also.
And they have a lot of players on their books, so they're not in a situation where they're going to have to be desperate with the money that they have, so they can negotiate from a little bit more of a position of strength than some of these other teams that are just going to be sitting there staring this pile of money in the face and just being like, please take our money. They can be a little bit more judicious about it, hopefully.
The only kind of sad thing about this for me, though, is Markieff and Marcus took these discounts so they could stay together in Phoenix. They don't even have trade bonuses in their contract. for as cheap as it was, you would have hoped that they could have at least extracted like a 15% trade bonus or something. But
and now they get to play each other tomorrow. So hooray.
All right. Well, let's kind of get to more of an overview here. Who were the big winners and who are the big losers to you? Let's start with the winners.
The Warriors and the Spurs.
Because nobody really made any moves that could have challenged them.
Exactly. Yeah. Which was justifiable and was expected. But I think that that's a big part of this is that, you know, while the title isn't everything, and I think you and I spend a little bit less time on that than some do, which I think is a good thing, it does matter. And, you know, Cleveland got better, but they didn't get markedly better. The Clippers probably got a little bit better in the short term, but not a whole lot. And, you know, that's good for those teams because they're going to get threatened a little bit less. Also, the bottom part of the West didn't really stack up. You know, those teams didn't get meaningfully better as well. So they're not going to get pushed in the first round, especially if Utah jumps past, you know, 7-8. I don't think they'll face a team that scares them in the first round.
Yeah, I would say that Fry could actually help Cleveland significantly against San Antonio. I think against the Warriors, especially if you're going to try and play him and Love together, like you're just going to get torn up. But I do think that's he could help them there. I think they got better. They removed even more so the chances of losing to somebody else in the East, which also has value. So and I thought that they did well to save all the money that they did to get the insurance for Mozgov, all that stuff. I thought Portland did well to get the pick that they did for taking on salary that they basically needed to take on to save money anyway. As far as the Warriors and Spurs, I don't think there was a deal out there among the people who are likely to be traded that was going to make another team like Oklahoma City or Cleveland a contender anyway. So, you know, I'm not surprised that happened. Would you consider the Pistons a winner?
A light winner. Yeah, I'd say they're better. They made their long-term future, maybe not their present, but their long-term future brighter. I would say that clear winners for me would be Memphis and Phoenix, who got first-round picks out of assets that I never would have expected it, and that's always a really nice thing for two teams. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I was going to agree with you. Memphis, definitely a big winner. I mean, that Stevenson for Green was probably like the biggest heist on the board, plus the first rounder that they got from the Clippers. I think that was probably like the best trade of the day just in a vacuum.
And I like New Orleans getting Jarnell Stokes. You know, it's not a perfect move, but he's a nice flyer to have on a team that really doesn't have that many flyers.
I thought New Orleans overall, though, I agree with you on that one
right.
Pretty micro move. I thought they're the biggest loser of the day by far. If I were them, and we talked about this a little bit on the 15 and 60, sort of what their strategy should be, my strategy would have been dump these guys. Number one, to get closer to the top of the draft, to hopefully get a superstar. This is also a little nefarious, but the worse your team does, the less likely Anthony Davis is to make an all-NBA team, and then you save yourself $4 or $5 million a year on his contract due to the Rose Rule. You know, certainly they would never admit that to anyone, but that's and then also just to get some assets for Anderson and Gordon. I mean, all the reports have indicated that Anderson is not willing to just resign wherever he is. He's going to test the market, and so you're either going to be paying him, you know, 16 to 18 is the figure that was thrown around by Woj. 20, I could even see that happening potentially. So if they could have gotten, you know, even just like a low first rounder for him or something, absolutely would have loved to have done that. Eric Gordon, another guy who, if they could have gotten something for him, they should have. He's going to probably get overpaid as well. And so, I mean, because like keeping those guys just does them no good at this point, right? Like, I think they needed to tear down and try to get some more assets, if only to just flip them during the summer for veterans or something. But, you know, I thought that those guys, especially Anderson, were, and Gordon, who has no love lost for New Orleans and really wanted to get out of there the last time he was a restricted free agent, not getting anything for those guys and just very likely losing them for nothing and getting a worse draft pick for the privilege of keeping them the rest of the year when the playoffs are completely hopeless. All that is very, very, very dismaying to me.
And even if you get them on a discount, that doesn't really help with the timeline of this team. They're certainly good players, but that's not going to make you good enough.
Yeah, and they're not getting them on a discount.
No, exactly. Yeah. And so the little siblings of those two moves is the kind of surprising part to me that was a larger story of this, is that there are a lot of guys on kind of smaller expiring contracts or just expiring contracts in general on teams that are going nowhere that I just thought would move. Mirza Toledovich is probably the clearest example of it. All the guys basically on the Bucks, whether you go from OJ Mayo to Jared Bayless, Grievous Vasquez, you know, just like all those guys. And when we did the mock-off season, they had trouble moving them. But you figure it's just like the second round picks, and even that, they aren't that valuable. And those guys are providing very little value for their current team. They're not going to get a discount from their current team. They're on disappointing squads. And to not see the move at all was disheartening for me, not only as somebody who wants to see every team get better long term, but to put those players who are very talented in better situations.
Yeah, and maybe you can say that some of these teams have so much cap space, more than they know what to do with. I wouldn't put New Orleans in this category necessarily, but the Bucks are going to have a ton of space. Phoenix is going to have a ton of space. So you say, hey, you know what? We might as well just keep these guys. And, you know, just the fact that they are still on the team makes them more likely to re-sign or something. You know, maybe that's kind of the thought with some of these. But, you know, I mean, one other thing that I thought was just kind of a nebulous loser is just overall creativity. You know, I think that we've talked before about how a first-round pick can often be too much, and a second-round pick isn't enough for some of these guys, although not necessarily the guys that you named, but maybe someone like Anderson or Gordon. But then, you know, get creative. All right, say, hey, we'll swap the first-rounder, and you give us your second-rounder, but we'll protect it for the back half of the second round to make sure it's a good second-rounder. Or we'll top 20 protect the second round or this first rounder so that it's only going to convey if this guy actually helps us be pretty good this year, something like that. I think that a little more creativity would be in mind. And also, you know, when I was at the D-League showcase, an executive was talking to me about how there really need to be kind of conditional draft picks that can be traded for to kind of facilitate more deals like this, and maybe we would have seen more guys move under those circumstances. Would you have the Clippers on your loser list?
Yeah, I mean, they gave up a first-round pick for a not nearly a good enough return. So, yeah, sure, certainly. Well, and yeah, also, we should talk about all the guys that didn't move, which is the other huge part of today.
Yeah, so who is your biggest surprise non-move? I mean, Gordon and Anderson were probably it for me. What about for you?
Those two, but if we're going to talk about the big-ticket guys, for me, it's Dwight Howard, because the Rockets aren't, you know, even if the Rockets have their kind of realistic best-case
scenario. I didn't think there was a deal out there for him, though, beforehand.
Yeah, I'm not sure there was. It was just the idea that I don't think Houston wants to give him his next contract, and the present value from him isn't that great, so you're kind of relying on the best way forward for them is kind of difficult. Yeah, I agree with you. There wasn't really a clear-cut market. Though, yeah. I'm guessing, like, if you called up Boston and said, hey, Dwight Howard for David Lee plus what picks do you think make it fair, that you could come to something that...
Well, okay, yeah. So what picks make it fair, though, to you, right? Like, I mean, I think that other teams, because he wasn't going to either opt in, there was some talk that the Bucks were trying to get him, but they wanted him to opt in, which is no way he was ever going to do that for his player option. So if he's going to be a free agent, I mean, what's the price for a Dwight Howard rental? And you know, is, I think most teams weren't willing to pay that. But then for Houston, he's been on the team. He signed there. He theoretically had always wanted to be there. They could maybe still re-sign him. You don't know what his market's going to be like. Is a crappy second or a crappy first rounder, is that going to be enough for you to deal Dwight Howard? I don't think so. So that's why I never foresaw him getting traded, even though it made sense to explore the market. I just didn't think they were going to find it.
Yeah, that's all certainly fair. I just thought with the way that Houston's front office sees this, that I thought that they had more of a kind of the vision for it to maybe happen. You're right, it would have been hard. You know, like for me, it would have started with Boston's pick this year and then probably had something small on top of that. They have an army of just other kind of lower end assets. I think that Boston's own first would be the best part of it, but you could get other stuff too. But yeah, I think it's hard for a lot of those guys. I mean, Al Horford, I never thought was going to be moved just because it didn't really make much sense.
Same with Teague. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, exactly. So like that's a little bit of a different situation. And they're a team that is actually relevant, whereas Houston just isn't really at that level. And so I don't know that there was anybody that was shocking to me other than New Orleans guys, because that just made no sense. I mean, again, because people have talked about the Brooklyn guys, especially Thaddeus Young, but Thaddeus Young's a reasonable guy on his contract. He will be available this summer. There isn't the opportunity cost with him that there is with all these expiring guys.
Yeah, we didn't see anyone get traded who is kind of like an established, like pure, like starter, you know, someone along the lines of like a George Hill. Danilo Gallinari is someone we thought could get moved. I mean, maybe you could say that Toronto is a little bit of a loser. They weren't able to upgrade at power forward, and there are reports that they are willing to move that Knicks pick, which is the lesser of their pick in Denver, but probably, you know, would have ended up no worse than like 10th or 11th this year. That's a pretty darn good pick in this day and age to get traded. But there wasn't really anyone other than maybe Gallo, if you want to consider him a four, which I think he could have been in their system, that really would have been worth spending that much. And so I think ultimately, and they also supposedly were offering Patterson as well. So
if that was on the table for Thaddeus Young, the Nets should have taken it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it shouldn't have been. And I would be shocked if it were. So
yeah, the only guy, that's what we were talking about when that was on the deal, is like, I had said, oh yeah, if it was on the table for Ryan Anderson, they should have done it, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't, you know, that if it was, then New Orleans made a mistake. But yeah, it's hard. I mean, Toronto was in a spot where they wanted something that wasn't really there, and it would have helped them. And Gallo, I think you're right, is the guy. That's the move that we had discussed, but ended up not actually happening in it because we traded Gallo for Love. But you know, that was, Toronto was in that spot where they had a need and there wasn't really a guy that fit it. So if Denver likes Gallinari, which they certainly do, then that market is maybe a market of none.
Yeah, and I wonder whether Toronto, like we did in the mock trade podcast, offered their own first round pick for Ryan Anderson. I think that Knicks pick would have been too much to give up for him.
Agreed.
And maybe just New Orleans was like, well, you know, a back end of the first round, we'd rather just keep this guy around and keep his bird rights. I think that would have been a lot better of thinking if New Orleans were sort of the team that we, you know, were closer to the playoffs this year than they had been. I mean, maybe they sort of see themselves as still being good and they can bring everyone back and it was just the injuries that killed them this year. I don't think that's true, but maybe that's how they see it. So I don't know. I would have made that deal for Toronto's pick if that was ever on the table. I think that's something that would have benefited both sides, but it never ended up happening. What about Gasol? What'd you think of the fact that he did not get moved?
It surprised me too. I think that there, you know, if the rumored Kings offer was there, then yeah, they of course should have taken that, but I'm not sure that it was. And Powell, it's an identity crisis. I think Chris Herring is the one who I saw it on Twitter with, was a good point, is, you know, like, let's say that the Bulls do really want to re-sign Pau Gasol. Is there a number or a role that really makes sense for him long term with where the rest of the team is? And so the present is less valuable now than it was with Jimmy Butler's injury and everything else, and the future, he's not a perfect fit with them. So I would have moved him, but I didn't expect it to happen, just because they see this differently than I do.
Yeah, I feel completely similarly about it. You know, we don't know exactly what it was that Sacramento offered. They didn't have a ton of assets, but I do think that Gasol, re-signing him, maybe they will re-sign him, you know, and the most that they can offer him via the early bird exception, I think, is a little bit under $13 million, and his cap hold will be like 9.6, I think, going from memory. So that, you know, they'll have some space. Even if they keep him, they could probably sign someone for about $15 million in addition to him. That doesn't count Noah's cap hold. But to me, if Pau Gasol is your starting center, you're never going to be good enough defensively to be a real championship contender. And especially with, you know, maybe if they had 2011 Taj Gibson playing next to him, you could think about that. But then Gibson doesn't have any range either. You're really constraining your offense with him at the four. Mirotić, this other long-term piece that they still hope is going to develop, it's kind of been a lost year for him, but he and Gasol can't start together. So I think they really should have tried to get what they could for Gasol, because he just isn't a fit with the rest of their personnel, and he's old. And so now I think they're going to end up really overpaying him, and they're just never going to be good enough on defense as long as he's there to be a real contender, unless you just have absolute defensive studs at the other four positions around him, and you're just never going to have that.
And if he loves Chicago, then he can just sign. He could have just signed there as a free agent.
Yeah, again, this summer, right? I guess so. I mean, who knows? Maybe they'll re-sign him for like $10 million a year for 3 years, and then you can say, all right, you know, it was a good deal. Maybe they have some understanding of what they can re-sign him for. But I would imagine he's going to go for more than that in this market, to be sure. They at least will be limited to offering him a three-year deal due to the over 36 rule. But anyway, all right, that should wrap it up. Any other closing thoughts before we go?
No, well, except that this June and July is going to be absolutely bonkers, because now we saw a lot of teams that were fundamentally optimistic about what they can do with their cap space, with Orlando being the most prominent of teams that actually made moves, and there aren't that many guys, and so it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yes, it will, I think we will see potentially the wisdom of teams like the Wizards and teams like the Pistons, really the only two teams who kind of used that 2016 cap space early. And I think the Wizards, it was a good risk for them, and kind of ironic that they did a very similar trade to what they did for Marcin Gortat a couple of years ago. And I think that's actually worked out okay for them, having given up that pick, which I think eventually became TJ Warren, I want to say.
That sounds right.
No, it wasn't. It was somebody else.
It was actually before that?
Oh, no, I think it might have been Tyler Ennis, actually, is who it ended up being. So, yeah, that actually worked out pretty good. But, all right, that'll do it for today. Thanks so much for listening. We'll probably be back next week, I would imagine. Let this one marinate for a little while. In the meantime, follow me on Twitter at Nate Duncan NBA, and Danny is Danny LaRue. We will talk to you all next time.